My name is Bernie Rogers. I'm a coach, a trainer and a facilitator. I work with individuals and I work with organisations, primarily in the community and voluntary sector, but also in the small business sector and multinationals.
Welcome to the Curious Coach podcast. So buckle up as we travel around and explore the world of coaching. Here's your host and professional coach, Stephen Clements.
In this full-length episode, I had the pleasure of interviewing Bernie Rogers, a coach and trainer based in Ireland. Whilst we covered lots of different areas, we did focus on NLP and MBIT, or Multiple Brain Integration Techniques. These are just two of the areas that Bernie offers training in. And I'm particularly curious about the MBIT training, as I'm signed up to do the MBIT coach training with Bernie at the end of February in 2019. So I'll look forward to reporting back in a future episode about how I got on. Bernie didn't start out as a coach. She started out in training and has around 30 years of experience. But around 2002, she branched out on her own and offered training in the form of continuous professional development within the credit union sector, and started to carve out a niche based on her own experiences. It was in those early days Bernie was to discover NLP and eventually coaching.
I was working with a woman at the time, and she was asking me questions in a way that was really different and in a way that allowed me to go inside and get answers for myself really easily and effortlessly. And it sat really, really well with me. And when I explored what it was she was doing, that led me to NLP. And in around 2005, 2006, I made a choice between NLP and coaching, and actually went down the NLP route rather than the coaching route at that stage. So it was an NLP practitioner training course with a coaching focus. And then I realized that there was a missing piece somewhere along the way. And then 2015, 2016, decided to do a formal coaching course and did my coaching course with Alna Harrington in coaching development. Absolutely brilliant course. It was very much an organic move into coaching from the actual training. I always aimed to adopt an approach to facilitate people into their learning, to tap into what they knew already, and then move into learning new skills, new information, connecting with the new knowledge, and would have always aimed to use a facilitative approach in my learning. So the coaching actually sat very well within that structure. When I initially signed up for the practitioner certification, it was to improve the way I trained, to help make it easier for the people that I trained to connect with the information so that I would deliver it in a way that they would understand. So what NLP gave me, and what I believe gives people, is primarily a languaging tool to be able to, from a communication perspective, to understand their own communication and to be able to talk to and explain and connect with people with much more depth and understanding. And what the practitioner certification gave me was a set of tools and techniques that were very useful to use in a training situation and also in a coaching situation as well. So it filled a nice niche for me. It gave me language to make it easier for the people who were listening to me to actually understand what it was I was saying. Because I didn't only do communications training with individuals, I also train legislation and compliance. And on occasions, people might actually say that they're slightly dry subjects. And that's where the benefit of NLP comes in, because it's given me a way of using language to make subjects like that a lot more interesting to people when they have to sit and listen, maybe to a formal presentation for information that they've heard on several occasions. So for me, NLP, it gave me the language to make it easier for people to actually listen and to hear and understand what I was saying. And it also gave me a set of tools and techniques for when I was working one-to-one or when I am working one-to-one with people to make it easier for them to tap into their own resources, to find the answers for themselves inside, and to make changes to their own life relatively easy. Sometimes, you know, using one tool or one process, a person can actually make lasting change. I was working with a client recently in a relatively new job, and it was their first presentation, and they were pretty nervous about doing it. It's something that they were used to doing in a previous job, but because this was a new job, first time doing it, they just needed to remind themselves that they could do it and tap into the fact that they had done it before. So we used a couple of anchoring processes. So there's an absolutely fantastic process called the Circle of Excellence, and they used that where they tapped back into the calmness, the knowledge, the clear speaking, and various other different states of being for them. And they anchored them. And it meant that when they went in to do the presentation, they reactivated their Circle of Excellence, and they did an absolutely great job. They made a great presentation.
I suppose I'm curious in terms of, you know, how long does it take for somebody to anchor those resources that they need to be able to draw upon?
It's a relatively short process. Depending on how many resources the person wants to anchor, the Circle of Excellence can actually be done in 5, 10, 15 minutes. Generally, if it's the first time somebody has actually done it, and if they have several resources they wish to anchor, it might take about 10 or 15 minutes. But it's something that you can do with and for yourself. And as a coach, you can help other people with the process, facilitate them through the process. And if a person is skilled in anchoring and knows exactly what they want, can literally be done in a couple of minutes.
And in those sorts of contexts, your job as a coach, is it about arming the client with the ability to anchor themselves in that particular set of circumstances, or are you really helping them understand what anchoring is so that they can apply that to then to whatever they need moving forward?
It can potentially be both. I like the latter. I like being able to explain what's happening and give them the tools so that they can go away and use anchoring for themselves. For me, that's of most benefit to them. On occasions, there might be a client who will actually say, "Don't want to know now, just work with me on this to sort this one out." And generally what happens then is they'll come back and go, "Well, that really worked. Show me how to do it with and for myself." Because in the moment, sometimes people won't remember when they go away. So I like to give them the processes so that they can go away and use it with and for themselves further down the line.
How successful is some of the NLP tools and techniques? You know, is it something that's for everybody, or does it seem to work better with a certain type of client or certain situations?
It depends on the individual. Some of the tools and techniques will fit very well with some individuals, and some of them won't appeal to them at all. And basically what I do is, when I'm coaching, I'll offer the tool or technique to the client, I'll explain them, and then we can give it a go. And then if it doesn't work, there's generally another alternative in there. So sometimes people don't take to anchoring. It doesn't appeal to them. It doesn't work for them. And there's another wonderfully simple process called the new behavior generator. And that would allow the person to try on a new behavior or to try on an updated behavior. So literally what you get them to do is you get them to visualize the new behavior, and they have a chat with themselves around it. They see themselves actually doing the behavior. They step into the picture and really feel it. And they circle around that process several times until they get a positive internal feeling around the whole new behavior. And then they put it out into the future, try it on, and when they go and actually do the new behavior, their body recognizes that they've been there before, and generally the new behavior just flows in beautifully. Generally, I find that it's quite easy for them to connect internally with the process and to the process. Sometimes it might take a while to ease into it. So we might do the process once or twice or even three times in there. Sometimes if a client comes in and they're focused on the problem rather than what it is they want to get, NLP is really flexible. So it provides us with the framework for that. So if a person is problem focused rather than outcome focused, there's a nice set of questions that we can take time exploring around and asking, focusing on the problem. And then there's a set of questions which kind of it flows from a set of problem questions into a set of outcome questions, getting the person more future focused, focused on what it is they actually want and how that'll look, how it'll sound, how it'll feel, and tapping into the resources they have that'll help get them there. And then it would be once they're clear on that, that would be when the tools and techniques would come into play to, I suppose, to strengthen their outcome and help them to achieve it better. So that's a lot of the tools and techniques will raise awareness. And then once the person knows exactly what it is they want, will help them either clear the blocks to get to what they want, tap into the resources to help them to get to where it is they want to get to.
One of the things I'm struck by is it's based a lot around language, but it's way more than that in terms of there's a lot of tools to it or a lot of aspects to NLP. And like, how long does it actually take somebody starting out in NLP to get proficient at it or to get a point where they can see it making a difference with clients?
One of the first courses I offer is a 4-day course, sometimes run in 4 days, one after the other, and sometimes in 2 weekends. And even at the end of day one, and definitely by the end of day two, people are actually saying, I'm noticing a difference in what I'm hearing, what I'm doing, what I'm seeing, and in what I'm noticing in myself and in other people. So straight away, people will begin to notice and will begin to make changes. And then over a period of time, because a lot of NLP is about raising awareness, but it's also about a skill. It's about a skill in noticing, a skill in listening, and a skill in being able to do something with when you notice what you notice, then deciding whether or not to make a difference, and then using the tools and techniques that you have actually to make those changes and to make those changes actually stick.
I'm assuming it's about the awareness in yourself and I suppose your own use of language and how you view the world, but then also recognizing the language that your client is using and how they view the world and experience the world through the various senses.
Yes, and that's the nice thing about NLP for me. It's about recognizing that we have our own, in NLP, what we call the map of the world, our own perspective of the world, our own understanding of the world based on who we are, our values, our beliefs, our upbringing, and everybody else that we come in contact with. Each one of those people have their own map of the world. And it's about respecting the maps of the world from ourselves and the others. And then from an NLP perspective, for me, it's about if I can make it as easy as possible for the other person to understand where I'm coming from, then it makes it easier for the two of us to get on with each other, to understand each other. And if I'm coaching, for me to hold that safe space and facilitate the coachee to get where it is that they actually want to get to.
And I suppose I'm curious then from say that initial relationship that you have with the client when you meet them, say for the first time, do you find yourself trying to use neutral language where you're not implying any use of the senses until you can understand how the client is viewing the world? Or does that not really matter as long as you pick up the signs eventually and start to adapt the language that you're using?
I personally, in my coaching and in my training, aim to set out and use relatively neutral language, or I'll use seeing, hearing and feeling language together. So I might say something in three different ways. And it's really interesting because even if I say something in three different ways, we say if I'm training, the participants won't actually notice I've said it three different ways. They'll just hear the one that is their preference at the moment in time, so that it lands with them. And then they don't even hear the other two. So I'll do a mix of using seeing, hearing, feeling. I'll do non-sensory specific, and I will be listening out for the language that the other person is using. But I'm also listening out for the hand gestures and the body language that they're using and the way they're breathing. A person's eyes can also give you information about whether they're visualizing something, whether they're hearing something, whether they're gone into their feelings or talking to themselves, because all of those can give me hints in how they might be processing, taking in the information and processing it. And they are the kind of things that we cover in the training. So in addition to the tools and techniques that we cover in the training, it is also about raising the coaches, or the training is open to other professions as well, but from a coaching perspective, raising the coach's awareness around what it is they're noticing, what they're seeing, and what that might mean for them, particularly around the sensory-based language. It's a very useful set of tools to have for a coach, so that they can tap into what it is they're actually seeing and just be curious about what's going on, either with the participants if they're trainers, and with their client if they're coaching.
And in terms of, say, take something like the hand gestures, is it the hand gestures that are conveying where things are in relation to the person, you know, in terms of they're talking about the past or present or objects or stuff in their life, that they're nearly pointing to where they are in the physical world around them? Or is it way deeper than that?
It can be both. Generally, people will mark out when they're talking about happenings or memories. They may mark out with their hands, and they let you know whether it was in the past, the present, or the future. And as well as that, gesturing with their hands may let you know whether or not they're actually in their feelings, whether they're making pictures. So our gestures, what we do with our eyes, how we use our body, how we're breathing, actually gives off a whole load of information unconsciously, that if somebody is aware, they can tap into it and they can just use it to assist their client in whatever way is most useful for that person at that time.
It's kind of funny, because I find myself now being quite glad that we're doing this remotely and you can't see can't see the hand gestures that I'm making.
And it's really interesting that you say that, because sometimes, when I'm in the training, the participants will turn around and they'll say, oh my goodness, Bernie, you know, are you constantly looking at what I'm doing and listening to what I'm saying? And I'll say, well, in a training situation or a coaching situation, yes. And that's not to say I'll pick up on it all of the time. I will absolutely miss stuff. And then outside of that, no, it may just pass out of my awareness. Or sometimes I'll just be in conversation with somebody and go, oh, that's interesting. And then it won't even land. It'll just kind of keep going on its merry way. But yes.
Did you use any NLP techniques to prepare for this interview?
I did. I did indeed. And not only that, I also train MBRIT, multiple brain integration technique, the coach certification as well. So before I came on the call, I actually did some balanced breathing, where it's my autonomic nervous system into balance. So I'm neither too high stressed or too low down the dumps. I'm operating from a balanced perspective. So I'm calmly alert and balanced. And then I have a circle of excellence that's been working quite well for me since 2006. So I stepped into my circle of excellence and tapped into that before I came on the call.
It's good to see the tools that you use as well. It's not just a coaching technique. It's something that you use yourself as well, which definitely adds, I think, more value to it whenever it's something that we incorporate into our own lives as well, not just something that's used in a coaching session.
Yes, and that's the value I got out of and continue to get out of NLP and the MBIS is that the value that they have for me in helping me. And I did the practitioner certification and then the master practitioner certification. And it was only then, having done that, that I went on to do the trainer certification. And that was because the benefit that I got out of NLP, and the same happened with MBIT, the benefit that I got and I experienced out of it, I wanted to share with other people. So I went on to do the training in both of them.
Just before we jump into the MBIT, I suppose you mentioned that you offer a 4-day NLP training, and then what other courses around the NLP do you offer?
The 4-day is a foundation. It's an introduction. For some people, that is absolutely all that they need, and it's enough to get them started on their journey. If people want to continue with it, there's a 13-day practitioner certification. And if people want to go even further, so the practitioner builds on the diploma. And if people want to take it further, there's a master practitioner. And that builds on the tools and techniques, but also at a master practitioner level, you get to do a modeling project, because NLP arose out of, in the 70s, people modeling 3 or 4 key therapists in the USA at the time. So it's all to do with behavioral modeling. And in the master practitioner, each participant gets to choose their own project. So they pick something or someone that they would like to model. And they basically go and model what it is that person is doing. And then they come back in. So it takes about six days. The project takes about 6 or 7 months to actually do. And then they come back in and they teach what it is they've learned to other people. So we've had some amazing experiences. One woman actually modeled people who wrote novels and was very, very lucky, because she contacted several Irish authors who willingly gave of their time to be modeled and to learn more about themselves. And she has written several novels at the moment and is just waiting to be published.
Gosh. I assume there's a difference between modeling and mimicking.
Yes, that's a really insightful question. There absolutely is, because when we talk about modeling somebody, we're not only modeling their behaviors, but we're modeling what they're believing, what they're valuing. So we're modeling at a much deeper level. So absolutely, you talk to them about the environment, the skills that are involved, the capabilities, the competencies that are involved. But there's also deeper conversations had around what they're believing when they're actually doing what they're doing, what's important to them about what their values are when they're doing what they're doing, and what their identity is in and around when they're doing what they're doing, because sometimes people might step into a different element of who they actually are.
And is there a danger that people can lose their own identity, or is that not something that would really happen?
Actually, that's very interesting, because I haven't come across that before. At the end of the modeling projects, over a 2 or 3 day period, people will present their learning and their project and teach everybody else on the course. And I haven't come across actually anybody who's lost themselves in it. People tend to tap into what the person that they're modeling is actually doing. My experience is that they find their own niche and they adapt it for themselves, and they add into it their own values, their own beliefs, their own skills and capabilities, and they make it their own. That would be the purpose of doing the modeling project.
Certainly all very interesting. Now, the one thing I'm very interested in is what you mentioned earlier about the MBIT. And obviously, looking forward to joining you in February. So can you tell me more?
And I'm really looking forward to having you actually on the course as well. MBIT is multiple brain integration techniques. What it is it's a process to do with connecting us internally into what's going on in our bodies and into our internal wisdom, as it were. And neuroscience has actually caught up with ancient wisdom, or has tapped into and proven what ancient wisdoms have known innately for thousands of years. And that is that we have a functioning neural network in not only in our head, but in our heart and in our gut. And it's actually, scientists are actually calling that neural network that's in our heart a brain, and the same, the one that's in our gut, a brain. They operate, I suppose, independently is a way of putting it, of the brain in our head. And they communicate with each other and use a different language of communication. And we're not necessarily tuned into or listen to the messages that we get from our brain or from our gut. So for me, it's about learning to listen to our body, learning to tap into the wisdom and listen to the wisdom that our heart and our gut shares, as well as with our head. And I find that a lot of us in the Western world operate out of our heads and not necessarily out of all three. So we might do head heart, we might do head gut, but maybe not necessarily all three of them. And there's such a wonderful opportunity to tap into and use the intelligences of all three. So if you've ever had a time when you've been in the flow and things have absolutely just gone really, really well, and you know the decisions you've made have worked, whatever it is you're doing is really, really worked, that's essentially when your head, heart and gut are actually all working together.
When I first heard about MBIT, my initial reaction was skepticism. And it was only when I started looking into it and reading up a bit more about it, it was like everything just seemed to click, and it really resonates with me. And I think it was the one thing that, I suppose it's that phrase, my head saying one thing and my heart saying the other, and that we've probably all said at some point in our lives, it's like, yep, this is what we're talking about.
It is. And, you know, when people say, well, my heart isn't really in it. And if your heart is not in it, it probably isn't, you know, it isn't going to happen, or it's going to be much more challenging for things to actually happen in there. And that gut feeling that we get as individuals, there's a lot to be said about tapping into the wisdom of that good feeling. And unfortunately, I know for myself, I discovered that I didn't necessarily listen to my heart and my gut all of the time. For me, my head was very loud and made lots and lots and lots of noise and was a bit bossy and, you know, wouldn't listen to the heart and the gut. So the MBIT process for me, where it opens up communication and all three get the opportunity to listen to each other and align and work together and share their wisdoms, I found so powerful. And any of the decisions, so I would now use it to help me make, I use the MBIT process to help me make decisions. And I would also have a chat with, you know, my head and heart and gut and just check in on occasions with them daily just to see how they're doing and if they have anything additional to add. People who've been on the course have reported that for themselves as well, and I've seen it with clients, that in a very short space of time they reach a place where things just seem to settle inside, and there is that aha moment in and around knowledge, decision making, what to do, what not to do. And I had one client just recently who rang me back and said, oh my goodness, it's just so much easier now. You know, the where she arrived at in relation to an issue she had, she said, it's just so much easier. And I'm actually just noticing things are changing, and they just seem to be changing. She said all by themselves, knowing that they weren't changing all by themselves. And I had one person on a course a couple of years ago, and she introduced her young daughter to the MBIT process. And her daughter now does a nightly check-in with her head, heart and gut around how she actually is at the end of the day.
And I suppose I'm curious in terms of when you started using it for yourself, I suppose what was the biggest shift for you, or what was the end result?
For me, it's an internal difference. Me being more comfortable internally with me. That's a really good question. I'm trying to figure out how and put words on how it's different. So that there's an internal feeling of knowing and of rightness. So when I use the process with and for myself, and sometimes depending on what I'm working on, I'll work with another coach who will go through the process with me. It's an internal gentleness and knowing that this is great, and at this stage my head, heart and gut know that they're going to be, if they haven't been listened to, that they're going to get the opportunity to share and be listened to. So it's a very nice internal knowing and comfortableness, and it has changed how I am with me, because each of the head, heart and gut have what's known as the highest expressions of how they show up in the world when they're working in flow. And the head would be creativity, the heart would be compassion, and the gut would be courage. And for me, it's being able to show up with more courage and compassion and tapping into my creativity in how I do what I do in and around me and in working with my clients. And I'm thinking of the clients I've worked with. Now, in going through the process, sometimes emotion shifts for people. So sometimes the process itself can shift emotion internally. And for me, that always means that it's leaving space for something else to. So it's something clearing, and then it's leaving space for other things to actually flow in as well.
Is MBIT completely separate to NLP, or is it like an extension of it, or builds upon some of the things that NLP has created?
It's built upon NLP. The co-creators of MBIT, Grant Suslu and Marvin Oka, would both be NLP master practitioners, master modelers, NLP trainers. So they have a background in not only in NLP, but in a whole load of other areas as well. So they have brought their NLP skills and their behavior modeling skills to MBIT. And MBIT arose out of conversations that they had over a number of years. They used to have, you know, deep sharing conversations about what they'd noticed, what was going on in the world from a scientific perspective. And they began to notice that scientists were coming up with information about the heart brain, information about the gut brain. But a lot of the scientists were saying, oh my goodness, we have found that, you know, there's neural networks in the heart. The heart has its own memories, the same in the gut, and they communicate with each other. So the information communicates with the head brain. And the scientists were presenting that this is what we've discovered, but nothing was happening with it. So they actually then had a conversation around, I wonder if we went and had a look at how is this being applied in the world, and how can we apply it? So they looked at what people were actually doing in their daily lives that might tap into the information that was coming through from science. And they then came up with the process, with the actual MBIT process itself, to actually tap in. So it's the how of taking that information that science is actually coming up with, that ancient wisdoms actually knew thousands of years ago, and putting it into a framework to allow people to actually use that on the ground to help themselves and to help other people.
What I find interesting And you sort of mentioned earlier about the, you know, the breathing being an important part of it to put your system into coherence. Is this like a perfect coming together of various things in terms of the way there's a greater focus in society on mindfulness and mental well-being and everything else that is leading to techniques like MBIT being more accepted today than maybe it would have been 10 years ago?
It's becoming more and more noticeable that people are now talking about heart brains, they're talking about gut brains, there's more of a realization around that really, if we can operate from an optimal base for ourselves, one which taps into that courage, that compassion, that creativity, and if we can operate from our highest wisdoms as individuals and connect with everybody else's higher wisdom, it can only be of benefit to ourselves and to the planet as a whole. And MBIT has been around since 2012, and I think now it's an ideal time for people to become even more aware of it and realize it builds on and pulls together a lot of thinkings that are there already, and that would be the life work of other folk, and it pulls it into a process that can be used on a day-to-day, on an ongoing basis, just generally and specifically around various different issues that people might have.
I suppose I'm curious then, from a coaching point of view, how often would you introduce MBIT into the coaching that you do or offer it to clients as an option?
If I hear the client maybe operating only out of their head and not necessarily out of their heart and out of their gut, I may offer it as a process. And particularly if I hear people saying, my gut really wants to get involved, or I really want to connect with my gut, or I want to listen to my heart, and I'm really, really noticing, and maybe it's just because I'm more aware, but I'm noticing over the last 6 or 8 months that more and more people seem to have an awareness that they have a head, heart and gut, and that they're not necessarily tapping into one or the other. So I would be client-led from the perspective of, if I hear kind of only one or two of the brains are being used and not all three. So if the client's language lets me know, or if I hear them operating primarily out of one of them and not the others at all, I may introduce it. And there would be coaches who use the MBIT process as the total framework for their coaching. So they operate fully from an MBIT framework on an ongoing basis. So it's fairly adaptable. It's fairly adaptable. And the great thing is there's a wonderful MBIT community that operates as well. So once a person has been trained as an MBIT coach, there's an amazing online MBIT community with coaches from all around the world who operate off a generosity model. So it's a wonderful sharing, caring community where people support and help out each other. And there's also an element of continuous professional development that goes on. And Grant, that I mentioned earlier, has a great website called embraining.com. And he has shared an awful lot of his research and a lot of the resources on that website. And he's made an awful lot of them available for free. And we have a closed Facebook page in that. And on that page, regularly, on a daily basis, sometimes several times a day, he will post updates of scientific papers and new findings and interesting facts and that to keep us all up to date.
So I think it's fair to say I really am looking forward to February now.
And the great thing about February is that day one gives you the background to the thinking and the theory and that. And then day two, three and four are experiential. So what we do is we introduce you to the overall process in blocks and in steps. And each step is actually this demonstration. And then you go away and practice. And then you come back and you discuss how you got on, what your learning was, what you'd do differently the next time. So you build. It's experiential and you build on it over time, and then you're supported by trainers and by assistants as well in the room. So there's great support as well during the training and after the training.
Yeah, all sounds really, really good. So as I say, really looking forward to joining you in February for the training. Just a couple of short, random questions.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could gift one book, which would it be and why?
Oh, my goodness. If I had to pick on one, I'd probably, because we've just been talking about it, but there's so much interesting information in it, I'd go with The Embraining book by Grant and Marvin. And the subtitle of that is brilliant because it's using your multiple brains to do cool stuff. And it's literally because of all of the information that's in there and the fact that if folks were around to read that book, or if they read the book, it would allow them to do so much more because their three brains would be integrated. That's one I'd offer. Just another one that Grant wrote popped into my head, and it's called Loving Your Life. And that's a really interesting one as well. Gets people to focus on inside and outside and actually loving the life that they're living and making it into the best possible life. I go with Embraining first though. Yeah.
What's the one training course or learning that's had the most impact for you?
It's a toss-up between the NLP and the coaching course. That's a really difficult question because they both gave me pieces that I needed at the appropriate time. I'd probably go for me NLP because it gave me such a range of tools and techniques to be able to help myself and tap into and shift myself. So when I come into, if I have issues or difficulties or roadblocks or, you know, self-limiting beliefs pop up or whatever, the NLP has given me the tools and techniques to help myself shift them, or people to turn to, coaches to turn to who have those tools and techniques who assist me in helping them to shift. So I'd probably go with the NLP, and then the coaching would follow on a close second, because doing the course with Alva, it filled in the missing bit for me around coaching from just a place that added an additional strength and offering and provision of a safe place for clients that I work with.
What actually would be your definition of coaching?
My definition of coaching, providing a safe space where the client can actually explore and celebrate and challenge themselves. Because sometimes people come to coaching to celebrate achievements as well as clarify areas of difficulty or issues or focus on getting something different in the future. So for me, coaching is all about creating that safe space where the client can discover what it is they want to discover and where we work together. So for me, it is about working in partnership and co-creating that space, which allows the client to tap in to the resources that they have and find their own answers, because I absolutely work off the presupposition that the person has all the resources they need inside themselves. Just sometimes they need that space where they can be facilitated for themselves to go in and tap into those internal resources.
And the very last question, if time and money was no barrier, what's the one training course that you would still love to do?
That's a really interesting question because it's a challenge I'm facing for next year. I have three courses that I would like to do. And it's, which one would I choose? There's the MBIT Master Coach, which looks at additional brains that we have in addition to the head, heart and gut. I think the course that I'm really interested in at the moment, there's one on in America. Bringing it to Holland next year. It's NLP based, but it looks at the whole area of health. So it focuses primarily on health and improving health. So it looks at the whole area of beliefs, amongst other things. So it's a 15-day course. And my understanding, it's run by Robert Dilfer, is one of the people who run it. There's three other people as well, but he's one of the people who actually run it. I'm really interested. I think that would be the one that I'd potentially go for. And to go back on the old, our health is our wealth. And I think we all have the capability to be really, really, really healthy. And there's a lot of stuff that goes on at an unconscious level that we're not aware of that hold us back. And that if we surface that and become more aware of, we have choices and we can lead much healthier, happier lives.
Well, Bernie, I really have to say thank you for your time and your generosity with sharing what you've learned along the way. I really appreciate it. So thank you very much.
Stephen, thank you for asking me, and I really appreciate the opportunity as well. Thank you so much.
My sincere thanks to Bernie for taking the time in a very busy December 2018 to record this interview with me. I hope you found this interview useful. And as always, I'd love if you'd reach out and share your thoughts, ideas, or feedback with me. You can reach me at stephen@stephenclements.ie, and you'll find further links and notes on the show page at stephenclements.ie/podcast. And don't forget, that's Stephen with a PH. Thanks for listening, and until next time, don't forget, stay curious.